It's the highest quality referrals that you can get.
So the big question is, what are top agents doing to absolutely crush it in real estate? To get the answers, we interview the top real estate agents to learn their secrets to success. If you would like one-on-one access to over 26 of the top agents in the country to help you scale your business, then head over to eliteagentsecrets.com/partner, or you can just click the link in the description below.
My name is Andrew Dunn.
And my name is Peter Michael. Welcome to Elite Agent Secrets.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Elite Agent Secrets show. Today we are joined by Brad Spink, who has been in real estate for over 18 years and in the last 5 years has been running KW offices. He's been averaging over 50 homes sold per year since 2018. And along with that, he's also raising 4 children in the top 2% in all of the real estate industry. And today he is going to be sharing with us how to build and feed your database, get leverage as soon as possible, and investing in yourself and in the future. Brad, thank you for coming on the show today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. It's good to catch up with you guys.
Today's going to be a fun one. We just got chatting off air a little bit. And God damn, I have 2 kids and I can't figure out my life. And you have 4 and you're top 2%. Like, holy shit. Let's give everybody a little bit of context of how you got here, because I'm sure it wasn't an overnight success either. So take us back to day one.
Yeah, no, it wasn't overnight success by any means. I mean, I got licensed in 2004, and for the first 2 years that I was in the business, had no idea what I was doing. I was fortunate that the market was good. And if you guys remember back in, you know, if you think back 2004, 5, 6, everything was different. Lending was different, you know. Mid 500 credit scores are getting 100% FHA financing. We're having the seller pay all their closing costs. They have not a dime in the house. What could possibly go wrong? So we, you know, it was a process. So I started as a solo agent 2006. A friend of mine that had started a team at Keller Williams asked me to come over and run the buyer side of the business. So I came over and worked with him on his team for almost 5 years. Then 2010, Keller Williams asked me if I would be interested in a leadership role. So I actually got out of sales for 5 years, led offices for Keller Williams. Most of that was in the Southeast. You know, I spent a lot of that time in Charlotte, North Carolina. I did go up to Maryland for a year to do a turnaround on an office that corporate was about to close, and went up there. They hadn't been profitable in 2 years. Went up to Maryland for a year, did a turnaround project, got them profitable within about 8 months. I decided that I'd had enough fun with the leadership role. And in the middle of 2015, moved back to my hometown of Greenville, South Carolina, and then started building my own team from there. So that's kind of, you know, how I got to where I am today. And, you know, we do have 4 children. So it just so happened that we had 2. My wife really wanted to have a third, and that third became twins. And so we jumped from 2 to 4.
See, this is exactly why I don't want to have a third, because my nightmare, well, I don't want to say nightmare, because we're absolutely blessed. But I definitely fear that the third time we go, there are going to be twins and I'm going to be like, fuck, now I have to drive a minivan. Or very much close to it.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. If you could have been at the ultrasound and the silence, it was the most awkward appointment for this doctor, I guarantee you, that he's ever had. Because when we see 2 heartbeats on the screen, neither one of us said a word for about 15 minutes. Until he awkwardly backed his way out of the room and he said, I guess congrats. And he shut the door. And we're driving home. No one says a word the entire ride home. We're trying to process going from 2 to 4. Now, my twins are, they're boy, girl. They're 6 at this point. I just dropped them off at summer camp. And I mean, they're amazing, but it was an adjustment for sure.
Wow. One of the questions that I do have a follow-up is like, what made you get out of production, get into leadership? Like most start either, you know, I guess people do go back and forth, but if you're producing, you're having best years of your life, why would you want to go down that route as opposed to just stick at it and probably just exponentially grow your business? But here you are even turning offices around that are now profitable.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think I had done the lead buyer agent role for about 5 years. And honestly, I think I was ready for a different challenge. And so I like to push myself and I like to get out of my comfort zone and do something that I haven't done before. And I think once I had done the lead buyer agent role, I mean, we went from a team of 2 people to a team of 12. So, you know, 5, 6 buyer agents, multiple admins, a couple people on the listing side. And when that opportunity came up to be in a leadership role, I think I was looking at what's the potential of what this role could lead to. And also, you know, just wanting a new challenge. And so I think it just made sense for me at the time. Plus, if you remember, like 2010, we hadn't quite come out of the market crash. And so I think at the time, the idea of a full-time salary plus bonus potential, it sounded kind of good to have, a, you know, that kind of guarantee. So that was part of it too, I believe.
One of my questions along with that is actually about the office turnaround, because like, there's definitely people listening being like, that's not easy. Obviously, that office was failing for a reason. I would love some more specifics on how you kind of did that and achieve office turnarounds. Like, hey, this is failing. They're losing money. I've got to come in. I've got a finite amount of time to get these guys profitable, or otherwise I assume the office goes, right?
Or wrong. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about how you do turnarounds.
Yeah. You know, what was interesting was that market of Frederick, Maryland was... So when I got there, I think they had, this is an office that had been open for about 8 years. If you know anything about Keller Williams, their model, they need large offices. You need large offices because, you know, they have a cap structure. So once you pay in X amount per year, that's all the office gets. And then you're on 100%. So you can't have an office of, you know, 35. You need offices of 100 plus. And so, because a lot of times your top people are at 100% commission. So that office had been open 8 years. I think they had 35 agents. They only had 4 or 5 that were actually producers. And so for me, it was a matter of, I mean, I honestly got there, the reputation in the town was not good. And so I literally went to every networking event I could go to. We joined the chamber. I showed up at every single chamber event, you know, dressed nice, suit. I wanted them to see that the face of Keller Williams was different and that this is not what you're used to. And so then eventually, you know what I did was if I wanted to get in front of a top agent and I just picked up the phone in my first month there and called them and said, this is Brad, I'm the new leader at Keller Williams, they would have hung up on me. So what I did was I started putting some classes together that I only invited the top 200 in the MLS. And I sent out these nice formal, almost like wedding invitations. And I made sure that the very first elite class that we offered, I got a well-known person in that area to come be our speaker. He had studied under the Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Balfour, and then he had gone on to start his own company and brewery. And so he was a big name in the area. I got him to come speak for our first meeting of the top 200 in the MLS. But of course, I was up front. I was the one that introduced him. I gave a little 5-minute, here's what's happening in the market talk before I introduced him. And then what we would do is after the events, we would do a little happy hour downstairs. And now I get to mix and mingle with these top agents. And next thing you know, I'm going to lunch with them. I'm meeting them at Starbucks. And so I was able to start really at the very ground floor and just build a relationship with them to the point where, you know, 9 months in, now people are calling me and they're saying, hey, I've never met you, but I've heard about you. Can I come into your office and come sit down and talk? Because to be honest with you, I'm not really happy where I am right now. And then I knew when I started getting those calls that we were, you know, we had pushed the rock up the hill and now we had gotten to the other side and we were starting to gain momentum. So that's how we did it. But to be honest with you, you know, about a year in is when we found out we were pregnant with twins. And so my main goal was to get there, get them turned around, get them profitable. But, you know, I never planned to stay there long term.
Right. Makes sense. I think it's just like, hey, I'm going to get people of influence, people who know how to do numbers, get them to come over. And in the fact that they are all with KW now, it's going to allow people to go, hey, shit, if these big players are with KW and they're in this office, it's probably something potentially worth looking at, right?
Right.
Like that was the whole strategy around it. Perfect. So I want to dive into your first topic, your first secret to success, as we call them, which is building and feeding your database. So unpack for us why that is your first secret to success.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the real estate industry, the only thing that we have of value when we decide to exit is our database. It's the only thing that we have that we can actually sell. And so what I have found is when you build a database and when you feed it on a regular basis and you stay in touch with them and you stay in front of them and you find creative ways to get in front of your past clients and to stay top of mind, the referrals that you get, first of all, it's the highest quality referrals that you can get is from your database. I don't know, you know, any of us that have ever chased internet leads, I mean, we would much rather have a referral from a past client. Hey, this person that I work with has outgrown their current home. They need to sell and buy. I mean, that phone call is what we all want. So to me, the reason the database is so important, because it's always going to be your highest quality lead. It's going to be your most easily converted lead. Because typically it's a warm lead. They've already said to their friend at work, hey, Brad's going to call you today at 6 o'clock. So they're expecting my call. And so it's a much easier conversation. It's so your conversion rate on database leads is always going to be the highest over any other source of business. And honestly, when I track my numbers and I look at my average commissions, my average commission for a closing that came from my database is my highest commission that I make. Much more so than, you know, an internet lead or, you know, some other type of referral that came in.
Hey, I just wanted to jump in here and let you know, if you would like access to over 26 of the top agents in the country to help you scale your business, then head over to eliteagentsecrets.com/partner, or you can just click the link in the description below. Now back to the show. I want to take a step back prior to say, let's go to a scenario where your database is either small or it's new. What were you doing at the beginning to build your database to actually have a pull to pull from? Because obviously, like we focus predominantly on the internet side of things. It's just a way we can leverage. But the byproduct of that is over 5 years. So you've got this huge pool of people you've done business with, and that's where the referrals come from. But that ultimately takes time, right? So we've all got different methods to growing that initial data pool or that pool of clients. So how have you done that to build the database? I understand that how they leverage in the conversion rate's excellent, but if we go about a step further back, how have you done the initial build of it?
Right. Well, I always think, you know, in my mind, your first database is your phone. So that's where I started, which was, okay, let me go through my phone. So if I'm going to use whatever database system, and there's a lot out there, I don't really have a favorite, but if you're using a CRM of any type, is everyone in my phone in my database? And then I went to social media and I said, okay, who am I friends with on Facebook that would potentially do business with me or would potentially send me business? Is everyone on my Facebook page that fits that criteria in my current CRM? And then it's just a matter of how proactive can you, when you're done with those, how proactive can you be with getting out and meeting people? I mean, you're probably going to want to join some sort of networking group. I mean, honestly, you can find Facebook groups for just about anything and whatever your interests are, you know, join a gym. Join a gym. Go to the classes at the gym. Meet people. Make sure they know what you do for a living. You know, I mean, you can I would talk to my gym about, you know, sponsoring something. Like, hey, you've got this July 4th event coming up that you're really trying to promote. Can I sponsor bottled water that has my name and my contact information on it or something like that? I mean, it's just a matter, and there's a lot of different ways to do it, but, you know, you have to go out and be proactive and get in front of people and make sure that whether it's joining, you know, like I'm part of a B&I group, like a business networking group, whether it's joining a B&I or some other type of similar networking group. But finding groups within your community that meet on a regular basis and getting in front of those people, whether that's in your comfort zone or not.
And what does your follow-up look like? So you have a database, right? Obviously just having a database, because I have a massive database and I'm a loser with my database. Like I just did my first event for my past clients where I rented out a movie theater and I walked up, I'm like, yeah, I know you don't know me, but I'm as black and white as it gets. I'm like, just so you know, I've been shitty. I'm like, I don't follow up with any of you. I actually treated most of you like a transaction, like in full of a full movie theater. I just ate a massive piece of humble pie on Monday and just talked about how much I sucked, because it's just something I just don't do because I have the hunter mentality. Like,
yeah,
you know, we did 1,250 homes last year and I would say like 10 were from a referral. Like, you know what I mean? Maybe 20. So like, what is that? It's like 1% of 1,250 homes. Like that's not my strength at all. My strength is like, oh, you're done. Like, I'm not even going to give you the keys. You don't get a gift. Like I did my job. Somebody will show up for you next. Like I'm not proud of it, but I did my job. So, you know, for guys like me and girls, what's your follow-up look like with your database and what you do? Because to monetize your database, like I have a massive database, but I do nothing with it. So what's the point of it? And now I'm starting to. How do you monetize your database?
You know, and I always said that the 5 years I spent in leadership, I always said, if I ever get back into the sales side of the business and build my own team, I'm going to do fun things with my database. Some boring email every month,
right?
You know, is irrelevant. Like I don't. So here's what we do. We did put together a monthly newsletter. And if you're watching this podcast and you want a copy of my monthly newsletter, I'm happy to send it to you, or I can send it to you guys and you guys can. But I'm very proud of the monthly newsletter that we've built that goes out to our entire database. And so that has been, and we get some interaction. Our open rate on our monthly newsletter is around 40%, which is pretty good. That's good. Pretty sticky database. They like us for some reason. And we do the monthly newsletter. We have our entire database on a product called HomeBot, where they can track their home value. A little more accurate than Zillow. And I was shocked at how much interaction we get from that and how much people enjoy getting the monthly HomeBot email with, here's what your home is worth this month. So we do that. Now, we put on 3 client events per year. And I'll tell you quickly what they are. We have a minor league baseball team here in Greenville. It's an affiliate for the Red Sox. So we do, for years, we have done an annual event in the summer at the Greenville Drive. we do a big, so normally it's say 70 to 75 is about what we get for that event. And we'll do a big cookout before the game. And, you know, we'll have cornhole and we'll have, you know, a different game so people can play while, you know, we're waiting for the game. And then, of course, we have a section where we're all sitting together. We've done that for probably close to 10 years now. Everybody loves it. The second event that we do is more in the fall, and we do a food truck event. And we have a taco food truck. We have a dessert food truck. I pay a guy to play live music for an hour and a half. And we set up tents and tailgate chairs. And that has been a big hit for us. And it's easy to do. I get a couple of my vendor partners to help sponsor it. We just divide the cost, you know, by three. And so I can do that event for under $1,000 out of my cost. And it's been a lot of fun. People seem to have really responded to that one. And then the last one we do is we do a breakfast with Santa. And we've done the breakfast with Santa. I think last year we had close to 150 at the breakfast with Santa. I almost ran out of food last year for the first time, is how many people just kept pouring into the building. But obviously Santa's there. We're doing giveaways every 15 minutes. We give something away. We do a drawing and give something away. We have an art table off to the side where I have my assistant in charge of that. And the kids make their own ornaments. And so they leave the event with an ornament that they can go put on their tree when they get home. And so we've got, you know, huge buffet breakfast that I have catered. That's great food. And then, like I said, the giveaways every 15 minutes. So people don't leave. They come and they stay 2 hours because, you know, it's that type of event. So, you know, that one has always been our most well-attended event. But, you know, I enjoy getting back in front of our past clients. And it's interesting how when we see them, how it's always, oh, I've been meaning to talk to you. My neighbor is thinking about selling or something like that. And we always have the biggest gift that we give away at the breakfast with Santa is for anyone who sent us a referral. And so as we start promoting the event, it's always, hey, don't forget the 65-inch flat screen that we're giving away at the event is for anyone who sent us a referral this year. You still have time. So don't forget, you know, the event's December 10th. You still have up until December 10th to send us a referral and get in the drawing for the 65-inch flat screen. So events. And then here's what we do. In between events, we're running contests. So right now we're running a Summer's Out contest, which all they have to do is they go to the bit.ly link, they register for the contest. It's very simple. Name, email, phone number. And the last question on that is, who do you know that's looking to buy or sell real estate in the next 6 months? And you'd be amazed, 50% of them will put somebody's name down. So our Summer's Out contest is going on right now. Which we're giving away like an Arctic cooler, a wireless speaker, a hammock, some beach chairs and different things. My assistant handles all of it, fortunately. But we run events. We do a Valentine's Day event contest. We do a Summer's Out contest. So in between our events, we're running contests so that we can stay in front of our database all the time. And it's fun because we're giving them free stuff. And then the other thing that I do is for my top 100 in my database, we've partnered with American Lifestyle Magazine. And so every other month they get a magazine. We get the front cover, the back cover, maybe the back inside cover where we can promote whatever we want. But they get this, it's just for my top 100 in my database, just as a nice little addition for them, a little thank you for them. But they get this nice quality American Lifestyle magazine every other month, six times a year. And so that's the other thing that we do for our database. So that's kind of how we've built it. You know, like we...
I got a multi-part question for you.
All right.
Because everybody that's listening, we have an audience that's new, that's seasoned. Doesn't matter where you are in the business, it's going to be relevant. First of all, can you give us an idea of the cost slash investment that it takes to put on these events? That's part one. And whether you have a vendor or somebody helping you with the bill, contributing, mortgage, title, whoever, maybe like a preferred partner. And three, when is it too soon to do something like this? Or how would you scale it back for some of the newer agents or some of the newer audience that may or may not have the moolah to put on something like that?
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously getting the vendor partners involved is important. And I don't want to always go to the same people and ask for money and say, we're putting on an event. So, you know, we have two or three different lenders that we recommend to clients. We're still an attorney state in South Carolina, so all of our closings are with attorneys. We have a few different attorneys that we use on a constant basis. Our home inspection company always sponsors at least one event. My pest inspection company, the licensed contractor that we send the most business. So what I would recommend is if you're thinking about putting on an event, I would have at least two vendor partners, and they have budgets for this. They expect agents to, you know, to ask them to partner on different events. And it gives them an opportunity to be there, you know, to meet your clients. I mean, I can tell you, my electrician, my painter, they don't miss an event because when they're there in front of anywhere from 75 to 150, they're leaving there with business.
Yeah,
because I'm introducing them to everybody. Hey, by the way, have you met my painter? Have you met Brandon? He does a great job. You know, he just did a project for me last week. And so it's not hard to, it may be a little bit uncomfortable that, you know, the first time you put it on an event to go to a couple of your preferred vendors and say, hey, I'm doing this. Would you be willing to sponsor for $500 or $1,000? But, you know, my attorney makes that in one transaction that I send him. So, you know, for me to ask him for $1,000, knowing how much business he gets from me, he's not going to say no. So I would say, if you're going to put on your first event, I would probably start with the two people you send the most business. Mm-hmm. and tell them that you want to do this together with them. And, you know, and if there's a few people they'd like to invite, that's fine too. But, you know, I'd like to do this together, and I think it will help promote your business, but also it's a big win for me. And so I would start with that. to answer your question though, my goal is that the event out of my pocket is no more than $1,000 to $1,500. And so I can put on these events. We actually, and this year we did a Mother's Day event. We this is the first time I'd ever done it, and we had a very small turnout, but that's fine. But we did a Mother's Day brunch with mimosas. And I had, it's the only way I got my wife to come. And, anyway, I had one of my preferred, lenders paid for almost the entire thing. So it cost me less than $500 to put on that event. And so, you got to get them involved. But I think your goal is to keep the cost. I mean, I think if you can put on three events a year and each event costs you $1,000 or less, then you're doing really well.
And is there like a minimum requirement of people that you would have before you would start these things? Like if you're just an agent, you just started, you had five transactions, would you put on a client appreciation event like at the end of the year? Or
Here's what I would do. I would go to my local brewery and say, here's what I'd like to do. Can I have this space, you know, on Thursday night for an hour? And I'm going to have, if it's 10 people, when they come in, I'm going to give them a drink ticket. They can go up. The first drink's on me. And I'm going to give a 5 to 10 minute, here's what's happening in the real estate market right now talk. You know, hey guys, thanks everybody for coming. I want to keep this short, But I just want, everybody's always curious what's happening in the market. The rates have gone up. How's that going to affect things? Do we see, are we going to see more inventory? Are we going to see less inventory? So here's what's happening in the market right now. And you give a 5 to 10 minute talk. And I mean, that's a great first event because it's small, doesn't cost you a lot. You could probably get somebody to pay for the entire thing because it's going to be, you know, a couple hundred dollars. And it's a great first step. You're in front. You're the one educating them on here's what's happening in the market. And you're just setting the tone that when you have real estate questions, I'm going to be the one you call.
Yeah.
And so that's an easy first step, something like that.
Who doesn't love beer?
Yeah,
that's the major one. It's like, what does everyone love? Get them right. Beer
and roses. And I loved how detailed that was. It's like, you're like, look at this Brad. This is what he does. Look at this Brad. He does nothing. So it's just like, you don't want to quite go all the way over here where Mr. Spink goes. You can go like meet in the middle because, you know, that's a lot of stuff. And, I think it's pretty cool. I'm like, oh God, it's funny because a lot of people will, let's say you do an event for $500 or $1,000. And I'm not saying that that's how I feel, but I know a lot of agents are like, I don't want to spend $500 or $1,000, yet they'll go spend $2,000 a month on internet leads to try to close 1%. So they talk 99% of people won't even listen to them. So it's just, I kind of think it's cool and you get to be in front of them and you get to have fun. So, when I did that thing and I love public speaking. It's like my favorite thing to do. I'm twisted, but whenever I was in front of everybody at the movie theater, like it was nice to see some of my past clients. Like one of my first clients was there and I'm giving him a shout out. Like that's one of my first clients ever. And he's bought a couple, you know what I mean? So I kind of get it where it's at. And I've just had a hunter mentality and that's, unfortunate. That's been my greatest weakness. And I've admitted that for a very long time.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you would like one-on-one access to over 26 of the top agents in the country to help you scale your business, then head over to eliteagentsecrets.com/partner, or you can just click the link in the description below.